For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast.
Barbiturates remain a problem. They've changed from being drugs of abuse. You're not likely to be seeing people who are using these drugs as drugs of abuse. You are likely, however, to have people who are going to use them as a drug to kill themselves.
That was Professor Shane Dark from the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre at UNSW Sydney. Professor Dark and his colleagues have done some research which has turned up a bit of a revelation. Barbiturates, rarely prescribed in Australia these days, have become a drug of self-harm despite restrictions on access. After analysing data on barbiturate-related hospitalisations, treatment episodes and deaths, Professor Dark and his colleagues found that the population rate of barbiturate-related deaths tripled in the years from 2000 to 2018. The research can be found at mja.com.au and the full web address is in the show notes for this podcast. Professor Dark is my special guest today, and just as a warning, we will be talking about self-harm and suicide in this podcast. If this raises issues for you, please seek help. We recommend you call Doctors for Doctors at 1300 374 377 or Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636 or the Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467. I will repeat those numbers in the mid-roll and they are also in the show notes for this podcast. Here's my guest, Shane Dark. Perhaps we better go back to basics. What are barbiturates and what were they commonly used for up until fairly recently?
The barbiturates are CNS depressants. They're basically a group of tranquilizers that were used as sleeping tablets for anxiety and for epilepsy. They were very popular first-line drugs for this, and they were well-known as drugs of abuse if you go back to the 50s and 60s. Mm. They were replaced over the course of the 60s and 70s by the benzodiazepines, drugs such as diazepam or Valium, which are less toxic. So they're nowadays really only used for as a late-line intervention for epilepsy, sometimes for anaesthesia, and they're also still used in veterinary medicine.
So it's pretty hard to get a prescription for them.
Absolutely. And if you look at the number of prescriptions in this country, they've halved over the last 20 years. There's not a lot of them around on prescription because they were considered to have, they were just too dangerous. They had too much of a risk of dependence, abuse, but also they're very toxic. They're very easy to overdose on.
So where can they be got? I mean, given that we don't want to tell people exactly where they can be got, but how can they be accessed?
It seems that a lot of this is being accessed through the internet. And there are cases where people will actually travel to a place like Mexico to get them, but that's unusual. But really what's changed in the last 20 years or even medical use for prescribing generally for sleep disorders to a drug that is being primarily sourced from overseas, illicit market.
Talk to me a little bit about previous research in terms of barbiturates and how that differs from the research you did this time around.
What happened was we did a paper a few years ago on just looking at deaths and what characterised deaths. And that originally came out of another paper on suicide where we saw where all these cases of suicide in Australia had barbiturates on. My hackles raised immediately because shouldn't see them. I've been studying things like heroin use, drug abuse since the late 1980s, and they rarely come across them. So we thought, this is odd. And then we looked at the deaths and we found 511 cases. This is the first time it had been documented. This is actually people who died with these drugs on board and they actually were contributory to the death. This surprised us. And what it did tell us, however, is who was dying and the circumstances. And we looked at those deaths and there were a couple of things that were very odd, or many things that were very unusual. If you look at a drug like heroin or morphine, drugs such as that, the overwhelming majority of those deaths that are related to those drugs are accidental. About 90% are accidental. People don't try to overdose. They accidentally overdosed. In this case, it was completely reversed. 90% of these deaths were deliberate, were by suicide. Now, that's completely the opposite. That is only, and that's telling you intentionality is different here. A couple of other things that stood out from it. One is with suicide more generally, a large proportion have had an attempt beforehand. So that's why it's a good clinical predictor of risk. Almost all of the cases here we ascertained seem to be the very first time, which shows you just how toxic these drugs are. So a lot of these cases look very deliberate, are well planned, well sourced, well researched. Not all of them, but many of them. The other thing was, when we think of these sorts of deaths, I think we tend to think of older people who are very ill, who are making a decision to end their life. There were certainly many cases like that. But something like a third of the deaths were people under the age of 44, and people in their 20s and 30s. And when we looked at the difference, that younger group were not particularly ill. The older group, if you look by age, the older group tended to be quite ill, but with low levels of mental health problems. The younger ones were quite well physically, with serious histories of mental health problems. And what you've got there is a completely different population. So younger people getting these drugs probably off the net, and younger people tend to be savvy. And we saw these deaths occurring. So look, the point was about those deaths originally was documenting that they were there, because it had gone completely under the radar. And what it does is provide a baseline, because this was all done before any assisted dying legislation came in.
Yes.
You've got is a picture of what happens, what people were doing without any legislation. How that differs from the research that's we've gone on to do that's coming out in the Medical Journal of Australia is that we thought, well, we've looked at deaths and let's have a look at population rates. Are they going up compared to the population? But also, what's happening with hospitalisation and people seeking treatment for these?
Yeah.
Is it part of a broader abuse problem? No, it wasn't. Hospitalisations were declining. The drug treatment people seeking treatment were very low levels and was consistent across time. And what we saw is looking, adjusting the population, this great increase in deaths associated with these drugs, and the increase was amongst suicides. What we've had is, I try to think of this as many as barbiturates in the 21st century. If we were having this conversation in 1975, we would have been talking about accidental overdose deaths. What we've moved from is a drug of abuse to a drug class that's being used as a drug to assist suicide.
I'm chatting today with Professor Shane Dark from the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre. Shane's co-authored research is published at mja.com.au, where it is free to access. We're talking about some hard topics today, and they may raise issues for you. Please reach out if you're struggling. It happens to us all. If you are a medical student or doctor, we recommend you call Doctors for Doctors on 1300 374 377. Otherwise, there are excellent support services available at Lifeline on 13 11 14, Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636, or the Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467. Check out the show notes for this podcast for related article links and those helpline numbers. Back to our chat. Give us a few numbers, Shane. What were your big findings?
As I said, I think the biggest finding, the increase in deaths increased threefold over the course of the study. That's an extraordinary increase. When we looked at the number of cases, that if we're getting this huge increase across time, the big increases seem to happen from about 2011, 2012 onwards, probably because the net has become so much more omnipresent. This major increase in deaths accompanied by no evidence of widespread community abuse. And the fact that the hospitalizations decline, even for suicide attempts using these drugs, is more evidence of just how toxic these drugs are, because people aren't turning up in hospital. And these cases look more like people who'd planned out, got information on the web on exactly how to do it. The other group, of course, you've got to keep in mind is veterinary medicine. Just under 1 in 10 of our cases, we're pretty sure that the drugs were obtained from veterinary medicine. I mean, that speaks to then, of course, the safety. I mean, you can never prevent everything, but it shows what it does show, however, is these drugs are around. So they are being, if they were being used in general medical practice, we would have far higher numbers, in my opinion.
Here's the $1 million question. What do we do about it? How do we stop this happening?
Well, I suppose one of the things we need to bear in mind is a lot of people here are going to be, the younger ones, I think, need to be, you know, if someone's turning up to a doctor, one of the things we did notice that a large proportion of people turn up to a doctor to get anti-nausea drugs, like metoclopramide, the week before or the days before their death, because they're taking these drugs and they don't want to vomit them up. So if, for instance, a young person you know to have mental health problems turns up and suddenly needs anti-nausea drugs and you've got no medical reason, it's a flag. As to what we do, the real problem, of course, is how you minimise access from the web. Now, it is possible that as years go by with assisted dying, more particularly older people may go down that route and we see a decline. But the younger ones aren't going to be going down that route. There's no easy solution in terms of screening. I mean, there's general suicide prevention. It's young people with serious mental health disorders need to be monitored, like by their GP and by specialists. Quite possibly asking, have you been researching this? Have you been downloading euthanasia material? The problem we've got here has been, we think, in many ways, a web-driven phenomenon. As with many other harms, it's not easy. But I suppose one thing I would say, however, is we weren't aware that this was bubbling away in the background. I think if I said to most GPs, are you aware barbs are still a problem and that there's young people, like a third of the deaths involving these were people in their 20s and 30s. I suspect most GPs would be surprised.
Would you like to see the government or the TGA, or, you know, same thing really, get involved?
Look, I think the first thing is for them to be aware that it's a problem. There must be committees that look at internet and harm. I think this is an issue. They're preventable and, you know, it goes back to general suicide messages. And I suppose promoting places like Beyond Blue, Lifeline, it's okay to reach out. Depression's common. Yes. Suicidal ideation, ideas, they're not uncommon in the population. You can reach out. There's no shame involved at all.
What would you like to tell GPs, Shane? Sum up the message for me.
Barbiturates remain a problem. They've changed from being drugs of abuse. You're not likely to be seeing people who are using these drugs as drugs of abuse. You are likely, however, to have people who are going to use them as a drug to kill themselves. Now, of course, if you're prescribing someone those drugs, when I said the prescriptions have gone down, they haven't gone away. And there are still older people we get stuck on our, you know, we don't want to change drugs.
Yes.
And so there's sort of like it's almost like heritage prescribing, but there are legitimate reasons to prescribe it. And of course, with all of these drugs, Kate, the person you're prescribing it to isn't necessarily the person who's going to end up using it. So I suppose getting across, one, being aware, is the person you're prescribing this to at risk? Are there alternatives? And two, I think these are highly toxic drugs. So if you're going to use a drug like this with alcohol, for example, you're highly risky. I suppose what I'd like to get across to GPs is the fact that they are still around. They are being used now. They've changed from drugs of abuse to drugs of suicide. And if you are prescribing them, keep this in mind.
Thanks, Shane. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.